following is an Auburn. The following is an Auburn. The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be a part of the show, call 334-321-1390 or text in at 334-784-1067. The boys are bringing you all the action on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. When it comes to the Tigers, the SEC, and the hottest topics in sports, this is where you want to be.
The 10 biggest games in 2026, and Auburn's name is not mentioned. It's Monday, and you're on the line.
Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, straight from the ESPN 106.7 studio, here's Kristen Griffin and Trip Upton.
Yes, welcome in, welcome in. It is the Monday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. I'm Christian Griffin here with you in the studio. A very, very good weekend. A very long, a very hot weekend, and you feel like that's going to follow suit here into the week. I feel like there's a heat advisory or something that's going on because it's almost miserable just to be outside. And so major credit, major applause, and a big-time thank you for anybody that does any outside work. But we are very happy to be here in the studio this afternoon, and something you don't see very often that I was really, really hoping we were going to be able to see is possible penalty kicks between Brazil and Japan. I still don't necessarily know all of the rules. I'm having my man Trip Upton, who is in the studio with me. I'll give you a better introduction here in just a moment. But asking about the rules of what the overtime looked like because of the lack of golden goal and when the penalty kicks would become a possibility, because that's like the coolest thing ever. And so we thought that was going to be the case, and then Brazil scored with like a minute and a half basically to play. And so, with that, happy Monday. I got my man Trip Upton here in the studio with me. Happy Monday, sir. Hopefully had a good weekend. Crazy to think that this is the start of week four of the new edition, the new era of On the Line.
Yes, happy Monday, and it was a good weekend. I think I checked something off as someone to become an official Alabamian this weekend, in my opinion. I went up 280 to Birmingham.
Ooh, okay.
First time making my trip up that road. Went to a comedy show up in Birmingham with some buddies down in the show itself was in Hoover at the Stardome Comedy Club. So it was a good show. Great, good area. Had not been up to Birmingham as much other than downtown. So it was a good seeing kind of the suburb area, and 280 is. It was good passing through. You see like Alexander City, Dadeville. I know you're very familiar with Lee Scott, Sylacauga.
Oh yeah,
where we might have some listeners thanks to our Radio Alabama friends there in Sylacauga. So it was good. It was a good learning experience, kind of seeing all the places that I've heard of on that road. It was just maybe 45 minutes longer than it really needed to be, in my opinion.
It always is. Always is. And you'll be able to both of us are going to be able to experience much more of the state of Alabama this fall.
I'll be down in Mobile and Montgomery at some point.
Yeah,
so.
And myself and Caleb Robertson will be what feels like in Tennessee, maybe Montana. You never really know with how far Lee Scott has to travel to go play some football games in the fall, but that is a conversation and a frustration for another day, because it is a very happy Monday here in the studio as we round out the month of June here this week. And again, crazy to think that we're almost already here to July. It feels like the summer just got started, but literally before we know it, we will be prepping for SEC Media Days. We will be there in Tampa for SEC Media Days, and then we will be back to talk about it. And you feel like that is the official start to kick off, right? You get to late July, you get then into early August, and then once August hits, it's okay. It's football month, right? You now only have two Saturdays until January or February where there's no Saturday football, and then the NFL season gets started, and you feel like it's like, holy cow, it's now 7 months until there's not a weekend with football. And so a fantastic problem to have here coming up over the next few weeks as we count you down to SEC Media Days, which we are very, very excited for. But with that, you've seen a lot over the past couple of days and couple of weeks talking about the biggest rivalries in college football. You feel like those are always the summer conversations, and not necessarily diving into that because we don't feel as if there's much of an argument to have between one and two. I would respect anywhere from about 3 to 7, but the Iron Bowl is 1 or 2, and it's not 2 in my opinion. So not necessarily saving that conversation for today, but do want to dive into what some of the biggest games are in 2026 and how Auburn's name, according to Joel Klatten on 3, is not mentioned. And I know that that name comes with a little bit of sarcastic laughter within the SEC, but do want to dive into a little bit of that. Talking about the Auburn games of the future that, or I guess the past and the future, that were the biggest games of the year every single year, and then the ones in the future that can get back to being in that top 10 category, because it's been the Auburn Tigers as of the last handful of years that hasn't really held up their end of the bargain. And so if the other teams stay right where they're at, if Auburn can get back to that, what could that look like in terms of seeing Auburn's name in the biggest top 10 games of the upcoming years? We're also going to look at the SEC basketball schedule around the Auburn Tigers and how some of these teams have quite difficult road stretches. Some of them are a little bit easier. Some people have very difficult home stretches, and some people have very, I don't want to use the word easy, but less difficult SEC schedules. I know you had a lot of look on that side of things. And so really, really excited to dive into everything here this afternoon.
Yeah, it's going to be a great show. You know, we'll have some other stuff, more football-focused talk in the second hour. But if you want to be a part of the show, phone lines will be open up until 3:30. That's when Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network joins us. Before that, 334-321-1390 on the phone lines to join. And you can always text in the text box 334-784-1OTL, 334-784-1685. And Christian, as we get closer to football season, you start thinking about the big games of every single Saturday, and Joel Klatten had some opinions on that.
He does. He, in Fox Sports, again, he's been one to give his thoughts towards SEC bias and his complaints for things like that. And so you can take this for what it is. But I do think that when you look at these games, it's hard to make the argument of, oh, yeah, These are pretty big games, and a lot of them are early in the season. Ones that we've talked a lot about that week two, because a couple of weeks ago we did the best weekends for college football, which we'll probably revisit before everything gets going in late August. But looking at the best overall weekends in college football just throughout the entire slate, rather than just a big game or two, having, holy cow, I need to sit on the couch. I need to watch every single game that weekend, the 11 o'clock, the 2:30, the 4, the 6, the 8, all of those.
Yeah.
And so nice to see that there are some really big weekends early on in the season.
Oh, yeah. There are few and far between, you know, pumpkin patch, family photo weekends.
Wedding.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, fall weddings are just, yeah.
Unless it's bye week.
I think even then, though. I feel like, honestly, the bye week, though, is the week you get to catch up nationally. That's the weekend you want to be on your couch.
That's the weekend you get to watch all the other games.
Right. It's not my mood is being ruined by the Auburn game, either before, you know, early in the morning or in the afternoon or at night. You know, we talked about that a couple weeks ago as well. But, yeah, no, there are not a lot of, you know, weekends where you're going to have to tell the girlfriend or the wife, hey, just order a pizza. The boys are coming over. We're starting at 11 a.m. We'll have the SEC kind of, or the Big Noon kickoff. We'll go to the old SEC on CBS spot, the night game, and then we're doing the Hawaii test. We'll be up until about 2:30. So just order us a pizza. We'll be good. And then we'll do whatever you want on Sunday after church, and depending on what NFL football looks like.
Here's my car. Just
go.
Go make yourself happy and do it. Do what you need to do. This is an article from On3, and again, Joel Klatt listing his top 10 college football games that will shape the 2026 season. And he starts it off in week two, which we have mentioned is a very, very big week in the college football world. It's Oklahoma at Michigan, the home and home where last year it was Oklahoma on the road that got a big time, or at home rather, that got a big time victory. They now return, make the return trip to the Big House in week two. Again, a fantastic game. Klatt says that OU was a legitimate playoff contender after that win at home over Michigan, even if they did have a true freshman and quarterback. That was a big statement win over the Wolverines. And so the fact that now you're looking at it, a rematch very early on in the season, and funny enough that the two big rivals in the SEC that just joined are facing off against counterparts in the Big Ten of Michigan and Ohio State and Texas and Oklahoma. But this is his very first game, Oklahoma and Michigan, a very, very big early season test.
Right, and I think this is going to be such a – this is a game, if you love defense, watch this game. Kyle Whittingham consistently had such great defenses when at Utah. It was always a physical team on both sides of the football. He definitely would follow the trench model in the blueprint. If you don't know what we're talking about, go listen to Friday's episode, hour number two. That was a true talking season conversation.
But. And it was really fun. And again, I meant to do this earlier. Big time thank you to everybody for reaching out in the text box and talking about their enjoyment on that side of things. It's always a little bit of, not that we do what we do hoping for compliments, right? But
sure.
It definitely makes it to where what we provide is different than just reading off content of whatever the case may be that anybody can go out
right.
and read. But again, a big time thank you for everybody that reached out in the text box on Friday, because it was a whole lot of fun.
Oh, 100%. Meanwhile, with Brent Venables, he's a defensive coordinator formerly at Clemson, and that defense at Oklahoma was dangerous. Yes, they lose a little bit of talent on that defensive line, but they are going to reload. This is a game I would not be surprised if this is a like 17-10 or 14-9 type of game for that one. So it's going to be a game that you just sit down, and it doesn't have a lot of points, but it is going to be a big statement win for whoever wins that game in Ann Arbor, because it was in Norman last year.
Yeah, it's at the Big House.
Yeah, so that'll be it'll be a good one to watch.
Yeah, and then the same week is game number two, Ohio State and Texas. Again, we mentioned the OU-Texas rivalry, the Ohio State-Michigan rivalry, but the fact that you're now intertwining those four teams, it is really cool to see, and the fact that they're both happening on the same day for that return trip. Ohio State now makes their way to DKR, to Austin, Texas. It was Ohio State that won a relatively gross football game, 14-7, the last time that these two teams met. Funny enough, they met twice in that same year. Was it bookended? Was this week one last year?
I believe it was week one, because it was Corso's last game with College Game Day, and I think it was the first week of the season. And then they had already played originally in the Final Four in the Cotton Bowl.
Yeah, the Cotton Bowl, where Ohio State won 28-14.
When Jack Sawyer picked up the fumble, ran all the way back. That was storybook, man. But yeah.
Oh, that's the video of Caleb Downs in the end zone that drops to his knee. Yeah, that is a really cool video.
Yes, but you said this will be such a good game, this rematch. This is a game I think, though, is going to be a lot of offense. Looking at it, I mean, Texas went out and just said, oh, you're the number one player in the portal at your position on offense. Here's a check, Cam Coleman. Here's a check, Hollywood Smothers. Here's a check to stay Arch Manning and not go to the NFL draft. And Texas's offense is going to run into a Ohio State defense with Matt Patricia, a name that I don't personally like, thanks to his time in Detroit. going to be a great game. It goes to Austin this year, not in the Horseshoe. I'm very curious how that makes a difference. It kind of reminds me of the Alabama-Texas game, the home and home that they had in like 22-23 before Texas joined the SEC, where Alabama goes to Austin, wins a close game, and everyone's like, is Alabama okay? Meanwhile, then the next year, Quinn Ewers and the Longhorns go into Bryant Denny and win a big game that set them up for that playoff run. But no, I think it's going to be a good game with a lot of offense, a lot of superstars at the receiver position with Ryan Wingo and Cam Coleman for Texas. You look over at Ohio State, they have Jeremiah Smith and all of those, Brian Hartline, wide receiver, even though he's not there anymore. A lot of those guys are still in the building in Columbus. It's going to be a great one. Those two games kind of starting and ending your day with Oklahoma, Michigan, and Ohio State, Texas. Chef's kiss, phenomenal.
Was that game a couple of years ago, the Texas-Alabama game that was in Bryant-Denny, was that the rainbow ball that Quinn Ewers threw from,
yes,
like the 50-yard line that was the most perfect throw you think you've ever seen?
I believe so, because that's the one that they won.
Yeah.
Then yes, because I remember Quinn got hurt in the original game,
mm-hmm,
and I think was it Casey Thompson that had to come in and try and save the game, and that's why they lost. And effectively, it was a very obvious, like, okay, if Quinn Ewers stays healthy, Texas wins that game. It was the opposite, where they win by like double digits. Yeah, I feel like you're right.
I'm pulling it up right now, and not that it's doing anything for the radio side of things.
Well, I can preview the next game on the list.
Sure.
So yeah, the next game on the list, I think, is probably the most anticipated game in all of college football next year. Lane Kiffin, the former head coach of the Ole Miss Rebels, returns to Vaught-Hemingway as an LSU Tiger, and they're going to need the craziest. We have it pulled up.
It just doesn't get prettier than that.
Fires down
again,
deep down
just
the left
an absolute rainbow,
boom.
A lob to Xavier Worthy.
Mm.
Yeah, who caught it in the end zone. That was the first touchdown of the game early in the second quarter. For some reason, that's the one play that stands out.
Yeah, but no. It'll be such a great game, and it's two teams that are trying to jockey for probably the best of tier two in the SEC behind your Georgia and your Texas and maybe Alabama. And it's going to be a heavyweight fight, and they're going to need a lot of field security. They're going to need a lot. They might need to clear the jails out that weekend for both fan bases. There's going to be a lot of fights in the Grove, and well, I'm very curious to see how that one plans out.
This is one of those games that you hope that the on-field between the whistles plays out the way that everything outside is going to play. Like,
right,
the drama that is filled with Lane Kiffin making the return trip to Oxford with a new team, with probably the highest spending team in college football.
Seriously.
You just hope that drama that works its way all throughout what most likely will be College game day, if it's not already confirmed for that weekend. But the drama between that, the drama between all of the fans, and just the media buzz, I hope that what happens on the field plays out to be a good enough game that's worthy of all of the stakes that they put onto that game.
I mean, it reminds me a lot of when Ole Miss went up to Knoxville a couple years ago, and that was the original.
Is that the golf ball and mustard game?
Yes, it was the OG Lane Kiffin returns to an SEC fan base that he screwed over to head out west. And then instead, I think the same thing could happen, because that game was a phenomenal game. I think because of a bad call in the fourth quarter or something, that's when they started pelting,
mm-hmm,
again, mustard, golf balls, beer cans, everything on into the field in Neyland Stadium. I would not be surprised. I don't know if you could say Ole Miss fans are classier or less classier than Tennessee fans, but I think that this game will be worth the drama, especially with two premier quarterbacks in Trinidad Chambliss and Sam Levitt.
Not necessarily spending too much time, as again, we're breaking down Joel Klatt's list of top 10 college football games that will shape the 2026 season. I guess this is not necessarily just the quote-unquote biggest games of the 2026 season, because I think there could be an argument for many other teams and many other games if that were the case, but ones that he fully expect to shape out the 2026 season for what the college football playoff could look like. Not going to spend too much time talking about USC and Penn State. I think it is a very interesting game, not having James Franklin at the helm for Penn State. Can Penn State finally win that big game? Wouldn't that be funny if Penn State just walks over Jaden Maiava and USC in week six? Texas and Oklahoma, the Red River rivalry. We know that's obviously going to be a very big game with John Mateer, Arch Manning, just the quarterbacks and all of the talent that is going to bring. Oklahoma trying to make a little bit more noise this year than I think they're expected to. You almost feel like the expectations were a little bit higher last year, which showed the playoff appearance, but you feel like Oklahoma this year is like, okay, if you can get 8 wins, you feel okay. If you get to 9, then obviously that builds up a little bit more of that confidence. And then Georgia-Alabama also in week six. I think everybody is very, very excited about that. Klatt says, you've got to think about the last 12 SEC championship games. Either Georgia or Alabama has been in every single one of them, and either Georgia or Alabama have won 11 of the last 12. The only one to not do that was 2019 with LSU, Ed Orgeron, and Joe Burrow. And so to think that you basically get a game like that in the middle of the season is absolutely awesome.
Oh, 100%. It's nice. You know, I know that Georgia already has so many rivals. They have Florida, Tennessee, Georgia Tech, Auburn, and, you know, they try and fake they're also rivals with Texas now for some reason. I don't know why, but
it's almost kind of the same thing with Alabama based off of just success and almost the – it's the rivalry of
– we're the two best.
The two – yeah, top, I need to top the SEC rather than the – long putrid hatred rivalry.
Sure, but I think this is one that kind of qualifies as both. I'm glad to see this game is played more often in the regular season. You know, Athens and Tuscaloosa being in neighboring states, you know, kind of what Auburn is with Georgia. But yeah, I mean, they says it 11 of the last 12, last one to not be have either of those teams in it was the 2013 one with Auburn and Missouri. I believe.
No, the last one, that was the one before, but last one was, again, that was the Joe Burrow.
Well, I'm saying did not even feature either of those teams.
Heard. Okay. LSU, that was the last one to win it.
Yes. LSU beat Georgia.
Yeah.
In that 2019 season.
Yeah. So, yeah, Auburn, Missouri, because 14 was 14 Alabama, Florida.
Yes.
With the pick and then the hit the receiver gave and got it, fumbled it, and gave it right back to Alabama. I think that was that game. If not, it was a couple years after that.
I think that might have been 20.
Oh gosh, okay.
Because that was Kyle Trask. You're thinking of the Jim McElwain Florida team that like baited to Atlanta 2 years in a row.
Yeah.
And played Alabama, and then Georgia started their streak of dominance by playing Auburn in that 2016 SEC championship. But yes, both of these games are good. Texas Oklahoma again. That'll be probably the 11 o'clock game. Just being at the Texas State Fair, just a great one of the few good neutral site games in the Red River rivalry. And then Alabama Georgia. I said it earlier. It's gonna be box office. So
yeah, gonna be a whole lot of fun. And that Red River rivalry is incredible. I was able to go a couple of years ago with Ewers and Dylan Gabriel when Dylan Gabriel threw it to his tight end in the back corner of the end zone with like 13 seconds to win it. Texas got it to midfield, had a Hail Mary, and it got knocked down right in front of us. And so
you forget that Dylan Gabriel played at Oklahoma, man. Like
it was a stud.
He was good. He was good at UCF before that, mm-hmm. and people forget that he was gonna go to UCLA. Was it UCLA? And then when Oklahoma opened up because Lincoln Riley left, Dylan Gabriel jumped over to Oklahoma mm-hmm. for the year one and then goes to Oregon and puts up one of the best statistical seasons of all time.
Yeah. Wild to think about. But yes, the transfer portal does that too. Just like when you get old, the years all run together. Like I couldn't even remember which. Yes, it was obviously the Kyle Trask Florida year. But that was 2014, according to Christian, so why not?
Sure.
We're off and running here on the Monday edition of On the Line. We've blown way past our first break, so we're going to take that now, come back, wrap up this conversation about the top 10 games that will shape the 2026 season, and then maybe a little conversation on what Auburn games could become huge or get back to relevancy if Alex Golish and if this Auburn Tigers team can take those steps over the next couple of years. We're just underway here on the Monday edition of On the Line. Stick around.
From revolution to rockets, from dusty frontiers to city skylines, these are the moments that shaped America. This is the American Minute, presented by Bucks Island. He entered the room the same way every day. A sweater, a pair of sneakers, a gentle smile. Fred Rogers believed television could teach kindness. Not through loud voices, but quiet ones. For more than 30 years, he reminded children they were valued, that feelings mattered. And perhaps his greatest lesson was the simplest. You have made this day a special day just by being you. One more moment that shaped the country we call home. This American Minute is presented by Bucks Island, family owned and operated, serving boaters since 1948. Online at bucksisland.com.
You're on the line with Kristen Griffin and Trip Upton. If you want to be a part of the show, call 334-321-1390 or text us at 334-784-1067.
Back here on the Monday edition of On the Line, he is Trip Upton. I'm Kristen Griffin. We appreciate everybody for being here with us and kicking your week off right here on ESPN 106.7. Diving into the top 10 games that will shape the 2026 college football season, according to Joel Klatt and On3. And we've hit a majority of the SEC games. There's a couple other ones that we won't necessarily dive into as we took a very long first segment. But Ohio State, Indiana, obviously a very big right. game in week seven. Miami at Notre Dame, that's a really cool quote-unquote non-conference game for Notre Dame, even though everything else they do is in the ACC. Football will remain independent, and based off of their bowl appearance and their Twitter remarks, they were happy to remain independent. And so,
sure. I mean, hey, if you're going to get millions of dollars by NBC to broadcast your games.
And to be a guaranteed team into the college football playoff as long as you win four games.
Literally, yeah. Just don't lose to Northern Illinois, guys. yeah, another two games in that rivalry week. Usually people would say the Iron Bowl is one of these games. It is not. With Michigan and Ohio State in the game, which is a great game. Obviously, it'll be Kyle Whittingham's first game against the Buckeyes as the head coach of Michigan. And then Texas A&M, a game that has had, I think the winner would be clinching the SEC championship appearance in both years that it had been played going into. I don't know if it did this year. I know it did the first year back, which was just like, oh my gosh. But yeah, the Aggies and the Longhorns, they loved it. They duke it out. So one of these guys have got to go. Mike Elko's got to get a win in that one because 0-2 thus far in the SEC for against the Longhorns, unacceptable.
Yeah, very much so, especially, again, with being able to keep Marcel Reed and everything mm-hmm. that school is also spending in terms of their commas in the bank accounts. And you did mention it that the Iron Bowl is not on this. The Deep South's oldest rivalry is not on this list. The Auburn-Florida game is not on this list. Auburn-LSU, Auburn-Ole Miss, none of those games are on this list, according to, Joel Klatt's. And I think that the title gives the reasoning why of these are top 10 games that will shape the 2026 college football season. And unfortunately, I think most of these teams, if not every single one of these teams, are favorites, if not legitimate contenders, to make it to the college football playoff, or they need that one big win to do it. Auburn, again, with the win total of 6.5, you feel like 7 wins would be a good year. 8 would be a great year if you even got in the realm of a conversation of you're in November, you felt like you had a chance. Then I think this could be altered, but unfortunate that Auburn is where they are or where they have been to where some of these games aren't listed as some of the biggest ones.
You know how you change that? Win football games.
Boom. Put it on a t-shirt. Easy math. We'll take a break. We'll come back, and we will flip over to the hardwood. Not some basketball news, but a conversation looking at the home and aways for all the other teams in the SEC.
You're on the line, and we're just 30 minutes in. Now back to the studio with Kristen Griffin and Trip Upton on ESPN 106.7.
To hour number one here on the Monday edition of On the Line. Appreciate everybody for being here with us on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. I'm Kristen Griffin. He is Trip Upton. We're having a good time here in the studio. Just wrapped up our conversation on the epitome of summer conversations, even in terms of football content, because there really isn't, and it's especially with the dead period in recruiting now. We do have some recruiting news, but not necessarily updates. It's more of a
mark your calendar.
Yeah, more of a look on the horizon side of things. And over the next couple of weeks, these will be the so Trip, tell me your top five baseball movies of all time. That'll be a lot of what these next upcoming weeks will be until we are able to get to Media Days, talk about that. We will be able to dive a little bit more as we get closer into what each of those days will look like, when Auburn is going, when their rivals are going, and what those days will look like, and kind of give you an overall, not a summary, but an overall brief, rough draft of what our shows will look like on those days. And so that will obviously bring a lot of excitement. But here in the dog days of summer, whatever content you got, that's what we got. And again, that's why we always are very grateful for any text in the On the Line text box. Again, 334-784-1OTL, 334-784-1685. Just any questions that you have, we can take it and run with it. We can make it an entire hour like we did last Friday, yes, talking about a question on you need to win a national championship. What will that look like? And so anything you have on your mind here this afternoon, again, the text box is always open, as are the phone lines up until 3:30 here this afternoon at 334-321-1390, and making our way to the second of the big three sports, which we will discuss here this afternoon in terms of SEC basketball and a schedule look. Last week, we were able to break down Auburn's home games against the SEC opponents, their road SEC games, and then the three home and home with Alabama, Ole Miss, and LSU, which was put on the schedule, which will be very fun to see. Will Wade back inside Neville Arena, which we did see him last year, but now back in Baton Rouge. And so what that looks like. But partner, you were able to find some really cool statistics, dive into just about every single SEC schedule for every one of these SEC teams, and not quite rank their easiest home and homes or their easiest road games, but it definitely stands out that there are some that have a little bit of a star next to their name on, okay, these games are relatively favorable for what you have at home.
Right. You know, I kind of got inspired by the conversation we had looking at the betting lines and looking at each team's like strength of schedule, like kind of the RPI strength of schedule, as we kind of talked about with baseball, but looking at that from football. So what I did is basically go through and look at kind of each team's schedule in the SEC, both home and away, and look at how many tournament teams they play. Now, obviously, the SEC, I think that it probably would save more time to say what teams didn't make the tournament than did, looking at Oklahoma, LSU, Auburn, Ole Miss, South Carolina, Mississippi State. Those are the teams that did not make it, while Arkansas, Alabama, Florida, Kentucky, Vanderbilt, Georgia, Tennessee, Texas A&M, and Texas all did make it. So first, let's start looking at just kind of the road games, if you would, partner, on our rundown here. So looking at it, the acceptable range of this was 7-4, because obviously you do have to play eight away games.
It's 9-9.
9-9, right. So looking at those, and this includes the home and home. Let's start out with the teams that have to play seven road games against tournament teams: Arkansas, LSU, and Oklahoma.
And so this is looking at, again, teams that made the NCAA tournament last year, right? Yeah, so the fact that you're looking at Arkansas, LSU, and Oklahoma, three teams atop the SEC that will play seven road games against tournament teams. That's crazy to think about. You then look, and this goes to show you just the SEC dominance, yes, but also shows you just the favorable schedules when we work our way down this list, because one game right below that, it's six games. So the road games that these teams will play, six of the nine are against teams that made the tournament last season: Alabama, Auburn, Florida, Kentucky, Ole Miss, Missouri, South Carolina, and Vanderbilt. And so that's obviously the biggest pocket, which I think that is the perfect number, even with seven, too. But looking at those, how many total teams is that? 11 teams between six and seven road games against tournament teams. I think that goes to show the SEC dominance as a whole. And then you keep working your way down.
Right, yeah. And this obviously, this does include home and home. So we'll talk about the home games against these teams as well. And then maybe zoom in a little bit looking at the Sweet 16 team. So looking at this five-game slate, you have Georgia, a team that was a a good regular season team ended up at that 8-seed mark and playing a St. Louis team that had a lot of transfers from Indiana State with their coaching staff, Robbie Ivia, being one of them. They play
greatest nicknames in basketball.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, for sure. That Georgia team that struggled in the postseason, they play five of those good teams, Mississippi State. It'll be interesting to see how they do without Josh Hubbard this year. I believe he is...
No, he announced he's returning.
Oh, well then, yeah.
He announced his return, which Auburn fans cried when he made that statement.
And then Tennessee, the team that went furthest in the... they went to the Elite Eight. I believe they were the only SEC team in the Elite Eight. And then Texas A&M, a team that Buckyball, not really going on the road a ton. And then there's Texas, the only team to play less than half of their road SEC games against these good teams. Looking at their schedule, I mean, think about it. When you have how many teams made the tournament? Like 10? Not playing most of those on the road is very, very favorable for the Longhorns, for sure.
It definitely is. And for a team that made a Cinderella type of run, you feel like Texas is the one team beyond what? High Point beating Wisconsin?
Sure.
That made upsets that were worth noting simply just because they weren't expected to do that with Sean Miller in year one. And so the ability to continue to get some of those big-time upset wins, and then you follow that up with, okay, Texas fans are now really interested in basketball. Look, Sean Miller brought the excitement back. Kevin Durant is now a big-time spokesperson for Texas basketball again, and not the women's side, but the men's side of Texas basketball. Mm-hmm. And so the idea that you have all of that, and then, oh yeah, here's this little gift that, by no means are we going to say the road SEC games are easy, and funny enough, ultimately, they get more and more difficult based off of how good you are playing, because desperation is one thing, and then again, just making it a difficult road environment for a very solid team. But Texas, who you expect to be a very solid team, only has to play less than half of their games on the road against teams that made the tournament last year.
Yes, looking at those road trips, they got to go to Gainesville. That will be a tough one. They also go to Athens. Then they get LSU, Ole Miss, Mississippi State, Oklahoma, and South Carolina. That, granted, they have not announced the actual schedule, so those could be midweek games. Those could be Saturday games. But none of those teams made the tournament. They have to play Texas A&M, one of their home and homes. Their home and homes are with Florida, Texas A&M, and Oklahoma. They also play Vanderbilt on the road. But you said, hey, Texas is getting into basketball. This is awesome. They're going to have the home marquee matchups to do that. Looking at some of these home games, Texas plays 7 home games against tournament teams. That's tied for the most in the SEC with Tennessee. Their home games, I mean, this is a just fantastic home slate. That'll be in the Moody Center in Austin. Alabama, Arkansas, Auburn, Florida, Kentucky, Missouri, Oklahoma, Tennessee, and Texas A&M. It's impressive saying that. Knowing how good Auburn has been in basketball recently, Auburn and Oklahoma and Missouri are probably the three least exciting games if you look at last year's schedule to now.
Yeah, you look at Auburn being one of the two teams that Texas plays at home that didn't make the tournaments.
Yeah, and the other
one sounds like a sentence that shouldn't really be possible to say.
With Oklahoma being Auburn being the NIT champs, and Oklahoma, I think they went did they win the crown?
They either won the crown or... Crown.
I believe they... West Virginia, I think they did. Runner-up was Oklahoma.
That's correct. I remember it went into overtime. Yeah, so the two games that they get that are not tournament teams went to the championship game in the other respective tournaments, and Oklahoma finished a runner-up, and Auburn won the NIT.
Yeah, so Texas, they will have the matchups at home. I don't want to guarantee, but I would not be surprised if College Game Day goes to Austin if they are as good as they're supposed to be and their opponents are good as they're supposed to be. Looking at some of these other games, home game teams, again, that six-game pocket is the biggest with Florida, Georgia, LSU, Ole Miss, Mississippi State, Oklahoma, South Carolina, Texas A&M, and Vanderbilt. And then you get to the home games and with only five, and you see the Auburn Tigers tied with Kentucky and Missouri. Auburn, a team that was, I guess, that gives them 11 games against SEC teams coming off a tournament appearance. And that home schedule for the Tigers is pretty hard, but looking at some of these other ones, maybe that's an advantage that you're not playing as hard teams, or is it a disadvantage saying we get the toughest teams we play mostly on the road?
I mean, I think when we looked at it, and that was our initial conversations was, holy cow, look at the road slate that the Auburn Tigers have. And it made it to where, okay, yes, this is difficult, but this doesn't change the expectations in year two for Stephen Pearl or for this team that was able to keep the priorities that they wanted to keep of Tahad Pettiford, of Simon Walker, and of Kevin Overton. I believe it was in that order. If not, it was Simon Walker first. No, it was Kevin Overton first, mm-hmm. And then Simon, and then Tahad, because I remember KO announced like 2 days after the NIT. But doing that, being able to put a lot of value into the transfer portal, and then you're bringing in one freshman as well, I think it puts even more emphasis on what those home games are. We mentioned it, the six regular home games, not including the home and home, 4-2 has to be the bare minimum.
Yes.
Making it to where it's a toss-up. It's a very good game with Florida and with Tennessee, I believe, correct? Is that the...
For home games? Yes.
Yeah, Tennessee mm-hmm. and Florida being the toss-up games that you're very excited for, but the other four are ones that you have to go out and win, much less considering if you're able to win the one at home against Alabama, win the one against LSU at home, win the one against Ole Miss at home, to where if you're sitting there at 6-3 or 7-2, once your road or once your home slate is done, you feel as if that is almost mandatory just based off of what is demanded from them on the road.
Right. And looking at to wrap up the at least home, what each team has, you mentioned Alabama. They are actually tied for the least amount of home games against tournament teams. That means five of the nine home games they're going to have are against teams that missed the NCAA tournament. They are tied with Arkansas for that four game. So looking at it, I would say that like the hardest, LSU and Oklahoma. If you combine those lists, they play 13 games in the SEC against tournament teams out of the SEC games that they play.
The 18, yeah.
The 18. That is that's a big number where you don't even have five nights off because obviously you got to play Auburn. You got to play Oklahoma. Or I guess Oklahoma doesn't have to play Oklahoma, but LSU does. They got to play, Oklahoma and LSU have to play each other. That's going to be a big matchup. And then the easiest, I said Alabama, because you only play 10 games against tournament teams. That means half your schedule is non-tournament teams. However, 60% of them are on the road, and it is way easier to home. It is easier to beat a good team at home than go on the road and beat an average team, in my opinion.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Just especially in basketball, you have a home gym, home environment. Look at what Bruce Pearl was able to do with the Jungle in Neville Arena.
Mm-hmm.
That is such a tough. It's tough for them to be on the road, but they play the least amount of it. So you can make the argument for Alabama. I really wouldn't doubt you. And Auburn will play 11. I think I said that earlier. 11 SEC teams coming off a tournament appearance. That's on the lower end of the spectrum, going between 13 and 10. So not a lot of wiggle room, but Auburn will have opportunities to beat good teams, build a good resume, but it won't be the murderer's row of last year. We probably need to take a break so that we can talk. And I want to also, after the break, look into, we've talked about tournament teams, but making the NCAA tournament, maybe not the biggest accomplishment. Still, it's a great accomplishment, but comparatively, let's look at the SEC Sweet 16 teams. Goodness, it's a tongue twister. The SEC Sweet 16 tournament teams and how they fall into team schedule and make it a little more apparent of, hey, is it easier? Is it harder? We'll be right back after this. I'm going to do the one throw to break this
sure,
time.
You got
sure,
it.
Sure, we'll be right back after this break with more On the Line.
You are On the Line with Kristen Griffin and Trip Upton on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and on the Radio Alabama app.
Wrapping up the first hour of On the Line, I'm Trip Upton and Christian Griffin here in the studio with me as well. And we continue a conversation looking into the SEC schedules being released and who kind of has to play what and where in terms of quality competition. We ran through talking about looking at where each team plays, just general tournament teams, teams that made the field of 64 with LSU and Oklahoma playing 13 games. Being the hardest, Alabama playing only 10 games against tournament teams in the SEC, but 60% of them are on the road. Now we zoom in a little bit, looking at the SEC against the four Sweet 16 teams in the Southeastern Conference, those being Alabama, Arkansas, Texas, and Tennessee. And I'm going to run through the numbers real quickly, and then we'll get Christian and myself's thoughts on it. Looking at the road games, Florida plays all four of them on the road. Not a single one, only one will come to Gainesville, being a home and home. Alabama, Arkansas, Auburn, Georgia, Mississippi State, Missouri, and Oklahoma only play three. Kentucky, LSU, Ole Miss, Vanderbilt play two. South Carolina, Tennessee, and Texas A&M play one, while Texas does not play a single road game against a fellow Sweet 16 opponent.
So looking at it, Texas, as we talked about in the first segment, plays four games against tournament teams from last year in the SEC on the road, yet not one of them is from a team that made the Sweet 16.
Correct.
So, again, not using the word easy, we'll just use the word very manageable for what Sean Miller wants to do in year two.
Yeah, there will be some inflation in terms of what the record could look like for Texas. They got to play Florida. That's still a good team that just got upset early against a hot Iowa Hawkeyes team. Looking at the home games now, Texas A&M and Vanderbilt will play all four at home. Obviously, Texas A&M is a home and home. Vanderbilt, Tennessee is a home and home, so they'll have the benefit and they'll have the rest there. So some interesting buckyball type upsets are 100% possible. LSU, Missouri, South Carolina, and Texas will play three. Auburn, Kentucky, Ole Miss, Mississippi State, Oklahoma, and Tennessee will play two. And Alabama, Arkansas, Florida, and Georgia will only play one final or Sweet 16 team on their home floor. And honestly, I feel like that's a little bit of a disadvantage, because you do have to play, all those teams had to play either four or three on the road and only get one at home.
Yeah.
With a home environment, that's a different ballgame.
It very much is. And that just goes to show the differences in obviously playing home versus away, but the way that the schedule works itself out, but also just the year-to-year success and what that could look like each and every year, because, I mean, by no means was Auburn expected to miss the tournament last year, right? Obviously,
right.
Like one team makes it, that changes everything for not only Auburn, but for a team like Alabama, who obviously has the home and home with Auburn. And so things like that change so much, but with the dominance of the SEC, you don't expect there to be too many teams that go through too many changes year after year.
100%. Look at the hardest and easiest. I think Vanderbilt, Missouri have a case playing six games all against Sweet 16 opponents. Florida could be made a case, though. All four or four of the five are on the road. Easiest, Tennessee and Texas only play three. Granted, that's because they are one of the four teams. But Texas gets all three in Austin. It's 100% Texas. Auburn plays five Sweet 16 teams. So Stephen Pearl will get opportunities to pull upsets and get big wins under his belt in Neville Arena and try and make Auburn one of these teams we're talking about next year to make the Sweet 16 and beyond.
We've told you all about it. Although the difficulty for Stephen Pearl and the Auburn Tigers, it's difficult everywhere, and the expectations I don't think necessarily change too much just based off of what the schedule looks like. Again, we will be able to revisit conversations like this once the times and the dates are announced. We'll be able to pocket some of these games together as must wins, the one that you need to survive, and then the ones that are going to change where you would sit in the tournament. But that will wrap up hour number one. When we make our way to hour number two, we'll talk Auburn football recruiting, we'll talk baseball portal, and Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network. All of that in hour number two.
The
following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be a part of the show, call 334-321-1390 or text in at 334-784-1067. The boys are bringing you all the action on the Auburn-Opelika sports leader. When it comes to the Tigers, the SEC, and the hottest topics in sports, this is where you want to be.
Although we're in the dead period for Auburn football recruiting and college football recruiting, still some big-time names that Auburn feels really confident about.
Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, straight from the ESPN 106.7 studio, here's Kristen Griffin and Tripp Upton.
Hour number one in the books. We welcome you into hour number two here on the Monday edition of On the Line. He is Tripp Upton. I'm Christian Griffin. We appreciate everybody for spending some time here with us on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. Having a good time here in the studio. We talked two of the big three sports, not necessarily Auburn football related as much in hour number one, but more so the lack of Auburn football conversation in hour number one and what that could look like in the future, because in hour number one, we talked about the On Three article written by Joel Klatt talking about his top 10 games in college football this year that will shape the college football season in 2026. He did mention a lot of SEC on SEC games, but the Auburn Tigers were not mentioned a single time. Not for the Iron Bowl, not for the Deep South's oldest rivalry, not for Auburn and Florida, not for Auburn LSU, not for Auburn Ole Miss, any of those. Auburn was not named because of, again, going out on the limb saying that shaping the 2026 season, and just based off of the teams that he mentioned, they are all playoff contenders, if not you feel like already penciled in to the college football playoff. But we talked a lot about that. We also were able to dive into, again, what those games that Auburn has on the schedule in the future, what those could look like in the near future for bringing Auburn back to having some of the top 10 games in college football. We talked about LSU Auburn, we talked about Auburn Ole Miss, the Deep South oldest rivalry, and then obviously the Iron Bowl, which we did not rank in terms of just college football rankings or rivalry rankings, because we all know where that sits. But dove into that, then flipped over to the hardwood and talked about SEC basketball and the schedule look. And Tripp was able to find a whole lot of numbers in terms of teams in the SEC and who they have to play on the road versus who they have to play at home. And we took that liberty of teams that made the NCAA tournaments. That was kind of the echelon. And so how many teams did Arkansas, LSU, Oklahoma have to play against teams on the road versus what it looked like at home, and how Texas has a very, very favorable schedule, I feel like you can say, for their home games, for their road games. And then also doubled down on that, and teams that made the Sweet 16, how many teams in the SEC have to play them on the road versus at home. All of that was in hour number one, so if you missed any of it, we always recommend you go back and check it out at our podcast center at ESPNAU.com.
And in hour number two, we've got some phenomenal stuff planned. Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network will join at 3:30. We'll talk to him about the recruiting boom, as well as what's going on around Auburn athletics. Always a great interview with Mr. Hillman. We'll look at the baseball portal and see what updates there are there, as well as talk about the Auburn coach that just got poached by Texas A&M. And what that could mean for the Tigers. But first, we're going to take a look into recruiting with maybe not, you know, with the dead period, not any contact or anything expected, no visits to report, but two names you probably need to watch out for in the state of Alabama that are committing within the next month, that I know that Christian Clemente, when we had him on Friday, if you have not checked that out, please do. Great conversation with hearing what is going on with this class and in the future. But two names you've got to know if you want to be on top of the latest recruiting action.
Yeah. Definitely, and excited to dive into everything here. Again, the phone lines are open if you would like to be a part of today's conversation at 334-321-1390. Phone lines are open up until 3:30 here this afternoon. So two segments if you have any thoughts on anything we talked about in hour number one, anything we are discussing here in hour number two, or if there's anything on your mind outside of Auburn or just in your mind for the sports world, we will happily discuss it here this afternoon. Again, 334-321-1390. The text box always open again at 334-784-1OTL. And you mentioned it, Tripp. Taking a look at some of the recruiting updates, and it feels like it's been quite some time here on the show where we dive into recruiting, and it's not because of a name that the Auburn Tigers have picked up. And how fantastic is that to be able to say, and how weird is it to say that, okay, yep, we don't have any names that the Auburn fans need to know that are committed, because there are 24 of them for the Auburn Tigers, and so not too much wiggle room where it stands right now. Pulling up the Auburn football recruiting, I accidentally clicked out of it in hour number one, but nope, that was a pop-up ad that was not at all. Don't you hate that when you go to click on something and then the ad pops up and it moves everything down?
Yes.
Gosh, damn technology. I tell you what, it's rotting my brain. Just kidding. Auburn is the number nine team in terms of the 2027 football class. Last Friday, we talked about them being number eight, but still very much into the top 10, according to our friends at Auburn Undercover and 24/7 Sports. Plenty of four stars, the three stars in there as well. Very, very high. Very, very solid three stars. And Auburn still looking to add a couple more names to the class. And the first one is Marquise Evans, who Auburn feels very, very good about. He will be committing on July 1st. He is that four-star edge from Spain Park that Auburn fans have heard a lot about for quite some time. And Auburn feels good about it, as does Tennessee, Miami, South Carolina, and Florida. They're in the hunt. However, you feel, and this was, again, according to our buddy Christian Clemente, who was in the studio on Friday and mentioned this name as well as Carlos May, who we will get to in a few moments on. It feels as if Auburn is out in front as of now. Some of these teams are trying to make that last push, but Alex Golas is trying to metaphorically stiff-arm the little brother in your football, your backyard football games, trying to keep the other teams away. Auburn feels really, really good about picking up another edge rusher.
Yes, looking at Marquise Evans, the four-star edge rusher from Spain Park, Auburn does really like their chances in him. I see him as kind of the latest guy that people have turned their attention to in the staff. Obviously, you got to pay attention to everybody, but looking at where they could be going next, Marquise Evans is the guy that everyone is on the watch for. Allegedly, he is Alex Golish's most recent emoji, if you believe the rumors and you believe the conversations. Looking at some prediction, some of those crystal balls, a lot of them, I think it's like, what, 90? I think on, at least on three rivals, it's 98% for Auburn comparatively to South Carolina. But there are some teams still in the hunt: Tennessee, Miami, South Carolina, and Florida. And how nice is it looking at that top, you know, the top players in Alabama, and Auburn is competing with these out-of-state teams, and it's not two teams, it's not Alabama and Auburn competing for a same guy where hometown doesn't play as much of an impact. You're going to be able to use the hometown card and keep a kid home.
Yeah. Kid from Birmingham, Alabama. He is 6'4", 250 pounds, is Marquise Evans. Four-star unanimously wherever you look, 24/7, 24/7 composite, on three regardless. But according to 24/7 Sports, listed as the 211th ranked player in the country, he is the 24th ranked defensive lineman, and he is the 10th ranked player in the state of Alabama. And so you mentioned that, the ability to keep guys in state. And when looking at the 2027 recruits that are in the state of Alabama, wild to see a bunch of ACC teams. I say a bunch, there are two at least right now. But NC State with Gunnar Rivers from St. Michael and Fairhope.
Well, that
one,
that's just because his dad was a star quarterback there. You're not going to have a I don't think that you can really count that as a big recruiting win for NC State to go into Alabama and get a guy. It's literally the my dad played there, and
sure.
I want to wear his jersey number, and I want to do that. That is the biggest recruiter for him is in his household.
Very much so, very much. But he is listed at least at the top of the football recruits in the state of Alabama. Isaac McNeil is listed as the second one right now, the four-star linebacker from Mobile. A 63rd rated player in the country, the second ranked player in the state, and the fourth overall linebacker. He is the commit for the Auburn Tigers, the top ranked commit when looking at it. You have a couple others. You have the interior offensive lineman from Central committed to Miami. You have the other edge rusher from Mobile that also goes to Vigor. Committed to Texas, Carlos May, who we will mention here in just a few moments. The defensive line, he is the fifth-ranked player in the state of Alabama. He is not committed quite yet. And then there is Cameron Pritchett from Thompson, committed to Oregon. Deshaun Hall, who is the seventh-ranked player, is committed to the Auburn Tigers. You have Al King Hall, who is also committed to Miami. And then Keith Richmond from Clay Chalkville in Pinson Valley, committed to Arkansas. But you continue to scroll down, you see Don Donovan Moore with the Auburn logo. You see Cedric Simmons with the Auburn logo. And that's after the top 10, you start to see a little bit more outlook of Oklahoma making their way, Clemson, Alabama, Kentucky, Georgia Tech, Memphis, Virginia Tech, Colorado, Florida. And so that's when you start seeing some of the other teams making their way into the state of Alabama. But something that Alex Golish wants to continue to dominate, again, is that 250-mile radius and dominating the in-state recruiting. And so doing a really nice job of that so far. And I think we ain't done yet, according to our conversation at least, because Carlos May, who we mentioned, is the fifth-ranked recruit in the state of Alabama, the 6'3", 305-pound defensive lineman from Ramsey up in Birmingham, the 121st-ranked player in the country, the 11th-ranked defensive lineman, and again, the fifth-ranked player in the state. He will be committing on July 18th. Auburn, Georgia, and Ohio State are battling it out for Mr. May. Georgia right now is kind of that front runner, but I think Ohio State and I think Auburn are both still trying to plead their case, and he is the top-ranked uncommitted player in the state of Alabama. But it continues just the conversation of take away just the success that Auburn has had on the recruiting trail, because like Christian Clemente said when we had him in Friday, 12 to 15 names was kind of the expectation right now. If you could get half of your class built up or somewhere near half of your class for Alex Golish before you even coach a game for the Auburn Tigers, I think that would have pleased a lot of people. If you're in the top 25, top 30, yeah, you're in a good spot. But take away that success and the fact that you are hearing the names of Auburn with Georgia, with Ohio State, with Oregon, with Texas, teams like that that obviously not only have the war chests of NIL, but just simply putting it, have had much more success than the Auburn Tigers over the last handful of years. The fact that that alone, you're seeing Auburn's logo in the name. We talked about that with the quarterbacks especially of you're not able to land some of the five-star quarterbacks, but Auburn's in the top five. Auburn's in the top three. And if you get outbidded by Oregon, you get outbidded by Ohio State against a guy that they feel has a little bit more promise and that team has proven a little bit more. It's a great problem to have. You then compound that with the success that Auburn's had, and it really makes it to where there are no complaints whatsoever from what this Auburn team has done in terms of the recruiting. You feel like it continues to build the excitement for everything that's working its way into the fall, and hopefully the wins are going to follow and make it that much easier to recruit in the next couple of years.
Right. Looking at I just wanted to touch again on May. I know you said Georgia's the front runner. I would agree with that. I think that this is with my 0 years and 0 hours of experience on the recruiting beat, just kind of what vibes social media and Christian Clemente on Friday kind of told me, saying that I think he's a Georgia guy. Ohio State is probably number two. Auburn, again, you have the home state factor. I think that does matter. A guy from Ramsey, but and it being the top uncommitted player in Alabama would be great for Auburn to land, but again, I'd rather be in recruiting battles with UGA or Ohio State than Southern Miss and
sure.
Samford.
Exactly,
know?
Yeah. And everybody looks at it of, okay, say that May does pick Georgia, or say that he picks Ohio State, and it is over Auburn, right? All of the commitment posts will say that. You'll see Hayes Fawcett post about that he committed over South Carolina, over Auburn, over LSU, and things like that. But there are so much more that go into it, and Kingston Miles is kind of the name that we brought up with Clemente on Friday about, okay, what did that whole situation look like? And when Kingston Miles flipped, it was, okay, he flipped from Auburn, yet that being said, it was Auburn that made the decision, right? It was Auburn that, yes, because they didn't feel as if Miles was going to keep the commitment, but being proactive and going and getting, was it Kamani Williams?
Yes, Kamani Williams.
From West Virginia, who committed the week before. It was the proactive mindset that Alex Golish and this Auburn staff are using. And if you don't get Carlos May in the defensive line, it may not just be because you lost, but it may be because, well, you wanted to part ways, because when you go and you look at this recruiting class, you already have Donovan Moore, who's a defensive lineman. You already have Nate Komba, who's a defensive lineman. You have Ryan Jackson, who's an edge rusher, and you continue to work your way down. I mean, the defense is very, very popular, at least on those sides, or at least in those position groups. And so just because there's not the Auburn commit doesn't necessarily get looked at as, Auburn can't compete with these guys.
Right. Georgia and Ohio State have the benefit of wins and national championship winning head coaches to be able to establish a footprint in this recruiting battle. Meanwhile, Auburn right now has yet to play a game with Alex Golish, yet is in that conversation. That tells you everything you need to know about Alex Golish as a recruiter, as Auburn as an attractive spot to recruits. And looking at that is such a big thing where, if those wins do start to pile up, you're going to have that as an even more advantage. And then it's not the, well, yeah, you can go to Auburn, but Auburn never wins anything. That narrative gets squashed if Alex Golish comes out and builds a respectable program that can get to a college football playoff, that can be a top 25 team year in and year out, like Georgia, like Ohio State has, like Tennessee has, like Miami has, like Florida is trying to do. Doing that would get Auburn into some recruiting battles, which you would not be able to fathom here today.
Yeah, a fantastic problem that Alex Golish and, again, this entire recruiting staff are putting themselves in positions to get out in front of the competition, and then if the wins can follow, makes it that much easier to recruit because you're not having to sell hope anymore, right? You have that the proof of concept that Auburn fans have really been begging for and really begged for the entire time with Hugh Freeze, because it was, man, the recruiting is there, but you got to have the proof of concept. You can't continue to sell hope, because as much as money plays a factor in the recruiting conversations nowadays, when you're a top player, you don't necessarily have to compete for commas. You don't have to compete for whatever your NIL demands are. Yes, obviously who pays the most plays a big time factor. Yet that being said, if you're going to go get money anywhere, proving and committing to that to the team that has proven to be a big time winner makes it a little bit easier. And so that's what Auburn fans have really, really hoped for. And that's what we are hoping that Alex Golish can do in year one. There are the football recruiting news. Again, no big-time updates, but a couple calendars that need to be marked, or days that need to be marked on the calendar, rather, with some names that Auburn could see make their commitment over the next couple of weeks. We'll take a break. We'll come back and talk about some baseball names that have making their way to the Plains. Also, a name for a different sport who's making his way from the Plains. We'll talk about that when we come back, as we're just off and running here in hour number two on the Monday edition of On the Line.
You're on the line with Kristen Griffin and Trip Upton. If you want to be a part of the show, call 334-321-1390 or text us at 334-784-1067.
Back here on the Monday edition of On the Line. He is Trip Upton. I'm Christian Griffin. And wrapped up the conversation about Auburn football and the transfer portal. No big time updates, but a couple of dates that you need to know if you want to keep up with the recruiting side of things. Auburn very much in the lead for one. Auburn, if they choose, playing a little bit of catch-up with another. But did want to dive into the baseball side of things. Not any big time news, but some more recent recruits and more recent recruits that have made their way from the transfer portal since the last time we talked about it. But I know something that you said before going to break last segment that I saw on the ESPN notification that I received was that we weren't able to talk about it on the show, or I guess didn't talk about it on the show, but Terrion Arnold released from your Detroit Lions. Again, the Alabama defensive back that has been kind of the storylines throughout Tuscaloosa over the past couple of days, the past week or so, following his arrest on the armed robbery and kidnapping charges. And you see teams wait until there is a final verdict to make any changes. So the fact that he's being released prior to a lot of the court dates and a lot of all of these trials going into effect tells me, putting two and two together, that it's not necessarily looking very good.
Yes, I think that the Lions just didn't want to really have to deal with a lot of the courtroom timeline this close to the season, having him potentially going to and from Florida with the court costs. Now, obviously, I'm not even going to make it he's an Alabama player. Like, I'm not even going to make that joke because I just don't think that that's a relevant factor in all of this.
Not at all.
You hope that I think the Lions did make the right decision. Frustrating, being like, you spend a first-round pick on a guy that can't make it 3 years, another defensive bat that you spend a first-round pick on for Detroit that has not panned out. You look at Jeff Okuda, other guys that have been drafted that high. But I'd look at it and I just say, and I'm frustrated with his choices. Hopefully, if he's proven innocent and Detroit wants to bring him back, if he is proven innocent, sure, I'm all for that because I think that people deserve second chances. However, I don't think that it's looking great. So I think the Lions did make the correct business decision and letting him go.
Yeah, well, just wanted to make that known while we saw that it was very relevant. Just got the ESPN notification. But while we do have just a few moments before Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network joins us on the phone lines, did want to look at Auburn Tiger baseball and the transfer portal. We mentioned guys like Zach Stevens committing from South Alabama. We mentioned John Beverly from Georgia State. Infielder Ben Swales committing from Iowa on the 13th. And then I believe the last one that we mentioned, we didn't really highlight it, but it was the day that we had Jack in the studio before last Friday talking about Corey Kling, the right-handed reliever from Arizona, transferring last Wednesday, I believe. But we just recently picked up a left-handed pitcher from UC Davis as a true freshman at UC Davis, finished with a 3.35 ERA, recorded 43 innings in 13 games played, made 11 starts in his first season of college baseball. He will transfer to the Tigers with 3 more years of eligibility. Left-hander by the name of Jack Pozzolo. And then the most recent one was the Mississippi State left-handed arm out of the bullpen, Dane Burns, committed last Thursday. He finished with a 3.72 ERA in his last two seasons with the Bulldogs, only holding a career 2.20 ERA against opponents. He will have 2 years of eligibility remaining. And Auburn fans got to see Mr. Burns, again, the lefty for the Bulldogs, pitched rather well. I believe it was in game two, where Auburn was able to it was game one, because after he got pulled, that was when the runs started coming across the plates, but it was not his name. And so excitement on that side of things. Being able to get any sort of bullpen arm for any team right now is obviously a big-time priority. But if you can load that up with guys who are not just the hopeful products, right? You have guys that have eaten legitimate innings, that have gotten legitimate starts, legitimate experience, and even more so guys in the SEC. You feel like that brings a lot more excitement to the pitching staff that was dominant last year, and Coach Everett Tiefert and Butch Thompson looking to continue it this year.
Yes, and speaking of the pitching staff for Auburn last year, Saxon Roberts heading to East Carolina.
Yeah.
To pitch there. Hopefully he'll be able to see a lot more action there, and that'd be really great for what the Purple Pirates can do.
Yeah, what a fantastic home field that is as well. We've talked a little bit about that, but wanted to give some Auburn baseball news in there as well, as it hits all three of our major sport conversations here this afternoon. We'll take a break, and we'll see what Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network has to say. Get his thoughts on everything in the world of Auburn athletics. He joins us on the phone lines when we come back.
Halfway through hour number two, you're on the line with Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7.
More minutes here on this Monday afternoon on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. He is Tripp Upton. I'm Christian Griffin, and we welcome in a man who's concreted into this Monday 3:30 slot. He is Mr. Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network. My friend, we appreciate your time, and hopefully you didn't take any putting lessons from Scottie Scheffler anytime recently, because the amount of putts that were missed for birdie and for par, and then again going to the playoff and missing one this morning, it's very, very painful to see world number one, who really struggles at just about anything, or doesn't struggle at anything except with the flat stick from 8 feet.
Well, I will say, as I enjoy watching Victor Hovland play golf, and I think he's a great personality and character in the PGA Tour world, so I'm happy for him. But yeah, no, Scotty, the putting has got to come along at some point, because it feels like this year has just been the year of him finishing in second, or he's been really strong, just not strong enough to come through with a major win. And obviously he had his opportunity at the U.S. Open to cap off the career Grand Slam. And now he's got the Open Championship in a few weeks over the pond. And that's going to be his last chance this year to get another major. But the putting is something that has troubled him in the past. And when he finally figured that out is when he turned into that just dominant star that he was for 2 years. And now he's not invincible as he was just a year or so ago. And that is because, like you said, the putter.
Yeah, I mean, how dare he come in second and third in every single tournament,
right?
Dude? He sucks. I mean, if he wants to donate some of those winnings for just barely making the cut our way, I mean, I guess we'll figure something out and we will take them. No, but know that you definitely had some thoughts on that, and it was cool to see Victor play the way that he expects of himself. And I know that in his interviews he's talked about being very, very hard on himself, but really, really cool to see all of the Norwegian guys that followed him around and were doing the rose on the 18 green and everything like that. And so it was a really, really cool environment, but didn't want to spend too much time on that side of things, because although there's not live action right now in terms of the Auburn sports world, Jordan-Hare Stadium is going to look fantastic yet again. We've talked a little bit about the recruiting side of things here this afternoon, and Alex Golish had to do recruiting not only for the players on his team, the players upcoming, but also for the fan base as well. And I think it's safe to say that the Auburn family has hopped on board with the excitement. Jordan-Hare Stadium sold out yet again.
Four consecutive seasons, and that's a really special, you know, moment, and really just accomplishment for this athletic department, in the aspect that, listen, the results on the field have not been where Auburn fans or anybody has wanted since Auburn's last had a winning season in 2020. It's not where the expectation is. And the fact that the Auburn family continues to show its support and that it wants to be inside Jordan-Hare Stadium every Saturday in the fall is just so special. And it really speaks to the work of our ticket office, our marketing department, fan experience, and everyone that is involved in making that game day as special as it is. It's more than just the wins and losses when it comes to everyone attending games. Obviously, that's first and foremost for Coach Golish and that staff this upcoming season. But outside of that building, it's something that I know from that fan experience side and the rest of the athletic department, the external staff, They want to make it where no matter if Auburn wins, loses, or ties or whatever, that whoever comes in that stadium has the best time possible. And they say they want to come back, and clearly that's the case. And obviously it's going to be rocking for those first two home games when they're both at night, and it'll still be rocking even for a lot of those 11 a.m. games and the afternoon games that will take place later in the season.
Well, Jacob, for the people that can't make it inside Jordan-Hare Stadium, they can listen to your colleague Andy Bertram, new ABA honoree in the ABA Hall of Fame. Talk to me about what he's meant to you and everyone over at the Auburn Sports Network.
Well, Andy's just been so special, and I'll start with kind of the Auburn Sports Network as a whole, because I mean, he started with women's basketball back when Joe Champy was leading the charge to those national championship games in the late 80s and early 90s, two straight Final Fours for him on the women's side. Then he joined his good friend Rod Bramblett on the baseball broadcast later that decade, and that relationship continued for 25 years until he had to take over the voice of the Tigers role in just what was an impossible situation after Rod's passing. Mm-hmm. And I mean, since then, he's done just an amazing job, whether that's in the football booth or courtside at Neville Arena or in that same spot where he's been doing games for over 30 years now at the Rod Bramblett home radio booth at Plainton Park. It's just something special to have that same voice for so long, and he does it in such a professional way. And for myself, just graduating here back in 2022, and Rod was my role model growing up. He was the one that after every Auburn football game, basketball, baseball, whatever, I'm on the Auburn Tigers YouTube channel refreshing to see when those highlights
the
would
YouTube
come out.
Highlights, oh yeah.
Exactly.
That was before the professional camera, too, wasn't it? That was like the field view cameras.
Exactly, exactly. So I'm waiting for all of that to come out, because if I watched on TV, I didn't have Rod's call synced up or anything like that. So I want to hear how he called this touchdown or this home run or this dunk or whatever it was. And getting to know Andy and Brad and everyone here at Auburn Sports Properties that have worked so hard in these past few years. It's special just to be a part of this crew and for Andy to be leading that and for him to be honored in that way is so incredible. And listen, he is the most appreciative guy that I know. If you've touched his work in any way, he thanked you in that speech. And it was so cool to be there and spend that time. His entire family was there. And again, just a special day on Wednesday to be able to get him inducted into the Hall of Fame, and he's Hall of Famer Andy Bertram from here on out.
And rightfully so, as we have Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network here with us on the phone lines. Maybe the impossible question to ask, and definitely putting you on the spot for it. And so apologies if there's not an answer that comes to mind. But I know we have the Rod Bramblett moments that we both grew up on and so many Auburn fans grew up on. Is there one recently of Andy that comes to mind of a favorite call of yours? Or has he talked about a favorite call that he's been able to call regardless of the sport?
I won't speak for him, but I think for me, being next to him for that entire Final Four run last year,
sure, yeah,
with Jani Broome and being the number one overall seed from Nashville to Lexington to Atlanta and then to San Antonio, and really that, I mean, it was the moment of the tournament for when Jani Broome leads the game, comes back, hits that three. I mean, I think the way that was covered by Andy as well as Randall Dickey was incredible. And, you know, there's so many other moments. I mean, you go back to his first Iron Bowl, the 2019 game. That was such a wild game. I can't really pick out one moment because there's so many of them. The two pick sixes, the missed field goal, 12 men on the field, Sean Shivers running through a man, as Andy said on that call. It's hard to pick one particular moment out from there. But that basketball run was just so special to be a part of personally. And I have to go with that moment when Jani Broome buried that three against Michigan State to really kind of, that was the moment you knew, all right, this is happening.
Yeah.
Auburn's going back to the Final Four, and being next to Andy for that was so special.
Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network, and a recent development late last night with Auburn track and field. Head coach Leroy Burrell hired by the Aggies. He has coached national champions in his time at Auburn. Talk to me about what the Aggies are getting with Coach Burrell.
Yeah, I mean, Coach Burrell, he's been in the game for a long time. He knows Texas well. He was at Houston for maybe nearly two decades, I think maybe 19 years or so. But it was a long time that he spent at Houston, his alma mater. And then he came over to Auburn, and he's done a lot for this program. And whether that's facility upgrades and getting the SEC championship, the outdoor championship back here at Hutzel Rosen Track, those are very important things for this program to have under its belt. And now it'll transition into a new era, and that is remained to be seen who will lead that. But Coach Burrell, obviously, just with his sprinting background, it's clear that Auburn, through his recruiting as well as the sprints coach Ken Harnden and his development, have developed some of the best sprinters and hurdlers in the world right now, between Guyantola Jaye and, of course, Jacoby Tharp. And that's not to mention the rest of the team, the relays team that won two consecutive national championships. Megan Hay was an all-around just stud as far as the women's throw side goes, and she won SEC titles in shot put. So lots of championships that he has brought to the table for Auburn. And now we'll look ahead to see where the Tigers go and try and continue a lot of that success, because it's been great the last few years being able to go to Eugene, and you feel like that this team has a chance to compete for a national title, and that'll continue with a lot of the talent that's coming back in a year.
Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network here with us on the phone lines, as he is every single Monday at 3:30. We appreciate your time as always. And final question before we let you get out of here. I don't believe that we were able to talk to you about the SEC basketball teams being announced, obviously not knowing the dates or the times or where they stack up quite yet. But looking at that as a whole, whether that's a road trip, whether that's at home, or whether that's the home and home that you have with LSU, Alabama, and Ole Miss, is there a game that stood out to you as soon as you saw this schedule that either excited you from a trip that you're able to make and go watch the Tigers play, or a team like Florida or Tennessee coming back to the Plains? Is there a game that stood out to you when you were able to see this schedule be released?
Well, the interesting one, and it's probably not going to be the most high-profile matchup or anything like that when we get to that date, but Georgia's back inside Neville Arena. Yeah. Georgia not being one of the permanent home and away opponents for Auburn, that's Alabama and Ole Miss. The Bulldogs did not come to Neville Arena last year. I don't know when the last time that happened was, but it certainly had been quite some time. And for them to be back in Neville Arena will be good. I think that Florida matchup is obviously as long as Coach Pearl and Coach Golden are in their respective spots, that is going to be a huge matchup because of their friendship and how long they've known each other. And this upcoming year, Florida is going to be the SEC favorite overwhelmingly. Auburn beat the Gators last year in Gainesville, and obviously that history goes back to the Final Four in 2025 that we just talked about a few minutes ago. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be a very intriguing matchup. And then when you look on the road, you look at Auburn going to visit a few former players. When Auburn goes to Texas, they'll face off against Elijah Freeman. When Auburn goes to Vanderbilt, it'll be Sebastian Williams-Adams. So I think those matchups will be intriguing. And I'll say for me personally, you get a little bit of Will Wade fatigue. I mean, let's be honest, LSU home and away, we just saw Will Wade last year, but that will be a big matchup as well. And I'll be interested to see how LSU kind of develops, because that's a team that he's had to kind of scrape together over the past few months with how things have gone in Baton Rouge over the last few years.
Yeah, it's funny to see all of the rivalries that are built by just the history and by years and years, obviously the Iron Bowl of basketball being one, but seeing all of the new school rivalries in there as well, of Auburn and Florida on the basketball, the hardwood, and not necessarily just based off of the players, but because of the respect, but the coaching battle between Golden and Stephen Pearl. So definitely a very, very fun one. The road teams won the last two matchups. And so hopefully that trend ends inside Neville Arena here coming up in just a few months. But basketball season can wait as long as we're excited for football season. We don't have to be overly excited about basketball in September and October. That's what Alex Golish, and that's what all the Auburn fans are really hoping for this upcoming season. Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network here with us on the phone lines. And again, I know we've hit that summer topic, the summer conversation, where it's a little bit more difficult because of the lack of live coverage. But tell everybody where they need to go just in terms of keeping up with anything over the summer, where they need to go for everything kicking back up here in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, well, the Hall of Famer is a Hall of Famer for a reason. That's Andy's keeping up with the Talking Tigers podcast with lots of new content. We just talked about basketball. General manager Brian Klobman is on the Talking Tigers podcast this week to talk about his journey through the college ranks. He's been a little bit of everywhere. He's been with Pat Kelsey for the last few stops, whether that's at the College of Charleston or at Louisville, and done a great job at building those programs up. And now he's going to help Auburn really build the roster up to a championship caliber roster with Stephen Pearl and the rest of that staff. And hopefully that gets started this year. Great conversation between Andy and him on the Talking Tigers podcast, Oregon Plus podcast network, and wherever you listen to your podcast. And then we are less than 68 days now from kickoff against Baylor in Atlanta. So excited for that. Follow at AU Sports Network for all the broadcast details. We'll have Tiger Talk that last week of August as well to kick off the season. And then it'll be time to kick off the actual football season. So excited for that.
Yeah, looking forward to it. And again, we're excited for SEC Media Days, which we feel like is the official kickoff to the SEC season. And so, again, that's where you need to be. And, Jacob, we appreciate your time. As always, we greatly appreciate your knowledge, your insight, and everything that you're willing to give to us here on the radio station. Greatly appreciate the friendship as well. And we're looking forward to having you on again next Monday to hopefully be able to dive into some more news.
Always happy to do it. Appreciate the time. And everyone listening, I hope, has a very safe and joyous 4th of July celebrating this great country's 250th birthday, War Eagle.
Yes, sir, War Eagle. Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network here with us again, the longtime guest joining us at 3:30. We'll take our final break here on the show, come back, give you some programming updates, some programming news, and talk a little bit about what tomorrow holds. Really, really excited for tomorrow. We'll dive into that when we come back and wrap up the show after this.
War Eagle, this is Auburn baseball coach Butch Thompson, and you're on the line in Auburn Opelika Sports Leader, ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line with Kristen Griffin and Tripp Upton on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and on the Radio Alabama app.
Wrapping up the Monday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. He is Tripp Upton. I'm Christian Griffin. We appreciate everybody for spending some time here with us on this Monday afternoon. Some programming notes just for the remainder of the week. There will not be a show on Friday. We will be here from Monday through Thursday, but with that, it will not be the drive following us. So no drive after us, and so your 7 hours of talk show coverage will be just 5 hours for the week. Yes. With Mr. Cameron taking a little vacation, and rightfully so, before everything gets started here, picking up in a couple of weeks. And so again, no drive from 4 to 6. It'll just be ESPN programming for that. And so wanted to shout that out for anybody that was expecting to hear anything when it sounds a little bit different at 4 o'clock. Just know that is the reason why. And a fantastic show here this afternoon. Got to hit on all three major sports. We got to hit on priority for football and baseball was just the recruiting side of things for Auburn baseball and the transfer portal. Auburn football, not necessarily any new news, but a reason to mark your calendar and still be excited during this quote-unquote dead period for college athletics, or for college football, I should say. But excited for everything that Alex Golish is still continuing to do, a top 10 class, number 9 and on 247. And so things continuing to trend in that right direction. In hour number one, we were able to dive into the SEC basketball, kind of the schedule outlook of the teams in the SEC and how many games they have to play against former or against last year's SEC tournament type of teams and how many of them are at home, how many of them are on the road. Auburn will play 6 road games against teams that made the NCAA tournament last year. They will play 5 of them at home. We doubled down by looking at the Sweet 16. Auburn will play 3 of the 4 teams on the road that made it to the Sweet 16 in the SEC, and they will play 2 of them at home. And again, all of that was in hour number 1, and then in hour number 2, dove into the Auburn football, the baseball side of things. And Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network joined us as well. And so all of that was on a really, really fun show this afternoon. Tomorrow's show going to be a whole lot of fun as well. We begin diving into EA College Football 27 and looking at the stadium rankings, looking at some of the Auburn football player rankings as well, mm-hmm. and how that can be a big-time benefit, not necessarily whether you're into the game or not, just what the creators of the College Football 27 video game are saying about the Auburn Tigers. And then Coach Jacob Osmond's going to join us in studio at 3:30. Talk about the decision with the interim head coach for 2026 with Lee Scott Academy. Talk about everything that's going on over on Academy Drive. Talk about his excitement for this year in specific, both as a coach and the accomplishment as well as the team. And it's just the changes that are happening in the AHSAA. And so really hopeful to I'll be able to dive into and have a really fun conversation tomorrow.
Yeah, I'm excited. I mean, college football's around the corner. High school football is even closer. We're getting to that magical time of the year.
We are. He's Trip Upton. I'm Christian Griffin. Appreciate everybody for being here with us. And sports are so much better with an opinion. Whether you love them, whether you hate them, we're back tomorrow to talk about them and hope that you'll be here to join us.